Well, I've got some takeaways from the Iowa caucuses and some keys for conservative Christian revolution in America.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, it was quite a fascinating night. This election continues to be like no other in memory. I've got some insights, some thoughts, and I want to hear from you. This is Michael Brown, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity. Here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. What are your thoughts? After last night's elections, the first primaries, the caucuses in Iowa, which were quite unique. I've got to be honest with you, I didn't know how caucuses operated until recently, and still watching it unfold was fascinating. And the fact that Hillary Clinton wins six precincts, they're dead heat tie by a flip of a coin and wins all six flips of the coin. You talk about tying into the Clinton legend that something is rigged and not fair. Wild. But what are your main takeaways? I don't know who your candidate was. I don't know how involved you were. But if you watched the elections carefully, what's the main takeaway for you? What's the main thing that you come away thinking after watching the Iowa caucuses unfold? Virtually a dead heat between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side. A strong victory for Ted Cruz. If you think that Donald Trump was an unlikely candidate to win in Iowa or was expected to fade a long time ago, even though it's a distinct loss for him, you could come away with a positive. Certainly a very strong finish for Marco Rubio. That was a strong surge, so that they're all going to come away with positives on a different level. I've got a bunch of notes here, and I want to share some good news with you from Italy as well. Got a report from one of our grads who is Italian and based in Italy, was part of a major marriage rally that took place over the weekend. So a bunch of things to cover. And somewhere later in the show, I want to give you five keys for conservative Christian revolution. All right? Five keys for conservative Christian revolution. Yesterday, I read a column, parts of a column from Kevin McCullough, who is a fellow radio host, friend, colleague, fellow radio host, and heard on many of the same stations that you're listening to me on right now. And he wrote an article on townhall.com, and it was entitled "Why Trump is Now Losing." And he's got all these negatives in terms of Donald Trump and his campaign, etc. And he says that the Donald could fall to third on Monday night. And then he said this: he will be lucky to edge out Rubio in third place in Iowa at this point, and teams Cruz and Rubio will raise lots of money and gain massive momentum heading into New Hampshire the following week. I read that yesterday because he kind of stuck his neck out to say that. And lo and behold, his prediction was right on target. It was a strong victory for Ted Cruz. When Rick Santorum won, he won by just a handful of votes. Ted Cruz won pretty substantially. And a very strong third place for Marco Rubio, almost edging out Donald Trump, which no one would have thought a week ago or even a couple of days before the polls that it would have been that close, or that it would have been between Trump and Rubio for second and third place. But one thing that's fascinating is, what do the polls know? What do the polls know? I mean, you're talking about people with scientific information and data and every type of internal polling and external polling and all that they do, and the candidates have their own polling and so on, and maybe some of that information coming at the last minute boosted the confidence of Ted Cruz and modified some of the expectations of Donald Trump and raised the expectations of Marco Rubio. But, I mean, all the expert polls, Trump was ahead, 5 to 7 percentage points as of right before in these prestigious polls, and they were all wrong.
fire we
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
What are some of your takeaways from the caucuses, from the voting in Iowa? What are some of your thoughts, your takeaways? 866-348-7884. A bunch of things I want to weigh in on, but I'm going to hear from you shortly. Did mention how Kevin McCullough was right on in his column. We'll see how prescient he is on the larger scheme of Donald Trump going in the wrong direction. But let's recognize he still remains the front runner. Ted Cruz, of course, has extraordinary momentum after really an incredible victory in many, many ways. And I'll explain why it was so incredible in a moment. And Marco Rubio, with his fresh surge, he's obviously got momentum. But Donald Trump still with a massive lead in New Hampshire and still has a lot of populist support. So, number one, I pray God, have your way, your best for the election, your best for America, your plan for our nation. And I continue to watch with great interest. But a couple of takeaways. Isn't it fascinating that 60% of the vote went for minority candidates on the Republican side? On the Republican side, because Senators Cruz and Rubio are Hispanic and Ben Carson's black. 60% of the vote on the Republican side went for minority candidates, and slightly over 50% of it went for Hispanic candidates. Now, obviously, they don't represent all Hispanics, and the immigration policy issues are obviously major. I recognize that. I'm simply saying this is a first, is it not? A first in terms of Hispanic vote? Hispanic Americans can look at this with real pride. And on the Republican end, there's diversity. Yeah, these are all very conservative men. Absolutely. Thank God for that. But that's significant. I tweeted that out, how come the media isn't shouting this out? And Jake Tapper from CNN made a comment, and someone said, nice to see someone from the left acknowledging that. And then Jake Tapper responded that neither he nor I are on the left. And I said, yeah, I'm on the right, and he's level-headed, middle-of-the road kind of guy. But it's just interesting to see some of the dynamic here. I knew when I began to get involved with endorsing Senator Cruz. Again, that's my personal endorsement on the radio. And in writing, I'm going to write what I'm burdened about, talk what I'm burdened about. And whoever does well, whoever I agree with, disagree with, I'll talk about quite freely, all right, and do my best to do that consistently. But I understood that he had good ground game strategy. He obviously had the best ground game strategy in Iowa. And that was the key to victory for him. And obviously, he has a plan. I don't know what the plan is. I'm not on the inside of the campaign strategy or things like that. And my main input, if I'm able to give it, would be on moral issues and on spiritual issues and things like that, and on reaching out to evangelicals. So if, you know, people say, hey, Mike, you should suggest this to the Cruz campaign, great, but I'm not an insider on the campaign or anything like that, okay? So in point of fact, I knew his ground game would be strong, and my assumption was that he and his team have a path to victory planned. In other words, they know they're not going to win here, they're not going to win here, they're not going to win there. But if they can win here and here and here and here, they can get in. So they have a plan for the Republican nomination. And then they have a plan, as each of the candidates would, that are serious candidates, and then how they could win nationally and how to posture yourselves and things like that. And be who you are, but posture yourselves accordingly. What strikes me here, again, about Senator Cruz, and I endorsed him for a couple of reasons. And I'll say again, I believe we have a number of fine candidates. And if some of the other candidates ended up getting the nomination, I would gladly vote for them and back them. If Donald Trump got the nomination, I'd really pray, if I'm supposed to vote for him, or not, or just vote for a third-party candidate, just being totally honest with you. And I am praying for him. I'm praying for God to really get hold of him and bring him to himself and use him. But what I liked best about Ted Cruz was twofold. I knew he was an unflinching moral conservative, one of the strongest principled moral conservatives we've had in decades. And on really, really strong issues, really, really important issues to me in terms of life and family and our standing with Israel and things like that, he's immovably strong in terms of his past history on those issues. But he was also anti-establishment. For example, Marco Rubio, what a fine man in so many ways, and strong and clear-headed and a great communicator and unashamed of his faith. And very strongly pro-life, very strongly pro-marriage. I deeply appreciate those things, although from the viewpoint of Israel, he's sided with President Obama on some issues that have concerned people in Israel. I've heard him give public speeches about Israel before the Senate that were moving. You know, he's got the heart to stand with the Jewish people. The concern I have is that he's too much establishment. Again, if he was the candidate that ended up getting the nomination, I'd vote for him. But to me, my concern is he's too much establishment because he may get in and may be liked and loved by the party, but then the party just stifles you. So Ted Cruz has been the one to take on the establishment. But when I first sat with his dad some months ago and his dad asked me to pray about endorsing Senator Cruz, I knew from the start, as we talked, that the only way that he won in Texas was with God's help, and that the only way he could win the Republican nomination and then the presidential nomination would be with God's help. Meaning, you could be Donald Trump right now, and he's enough of a star. He knows how to use the media for his purposes. He has enough money. He's got these various things going for him. There's enough anger in America and enough concern about the direction we're going that without supernatural help, he could potentially win the Republican nomination. Could he win the presidential nomination? That becomes more questionable. There's some others who theoretically, like a Jeb Bush, with the establishment money behind him and so much support, and he was a popular governor and all this family history that could be positive or negative, maybe he could have done better. I mean, he's almost doing supernaturally badly. I'm not saying God's pushing him down. I'm just saying it's wild how poorly he's doing. But when I saw everything that came against Ted Cruz, and I don't mean to say that this is proof to me that God is raising him up. I don't mean to say that. Okay, I don't know what God is doing. I know whom I've endorsed, but I pray, God, your best, your plan. That's what I pray for. Your best, your plan. And when I see things I like with one candidate, things I don't like in another, I'm going to call it as straight as I can. That's my duty to you here on the radio and in writing. So the thing that struck me is he got battered that last week. He had his poorest night in the debates, right? Maybe there was one that wasn't as good also, but definitely was not a good night for him in the debates. He was getting battered with attack ads. Donald Trump was coming after him strongly. Others, I mean, even Mike Huckabee and others were running ads against him, okay? He was getting hit from every angle. His Christian faith was being called into question, and you know, he's an anchor baby. He's not even an American citizen. He's getting hit from every angle. He's down by 5 to 7 points in the last polls, and he comes out with a 3 percentage point victory. And he gets up on TV afterwards in his acceptance speech, or not his acceptance speech, his whatever you call it, victory speech after the caucuses. And again, just the very beginning of a long, long battle, right? And he makes clear again, we're taking on the Washington cartel. We're taking on the Democratic Party. So he remains firmly anti-establishment. And it's not a matter of not respecting authority. It's coming against an abuse of authority. It's coming against career politicians who no longer hold to the conservative core of the Republican Party. And the other takeaway from this, I'm going to come back to your calls momentarily. The other takeaway is that conservatism is strong. Yet we knew it's strong in Iowa, a conservative state with a strong evangelical base. But as commentators were saying, this really is telling us that conservatism is strong. David Limbaugh had an article a couple days back, where he said that there's no question that Ted Cruz, as a strong conservative, is completely electable. And Ted Cruz has said that we make a mistake. We make a mistake when we say that in order to win, here's what happens. You have to show you're conservative enough to get the Republican nomination. And then to get the national election, now you have to swing right in the middle and you can't be too conservative. And Senator Cruz says, no, you can win by being conservative right of middle. In other words, not radical right, but right of middle conservative. You can win, especially if God's with you. All right, as soon as we come back, I'm going straight to your calls. You can weigh in on any side. It's not partisan politics. We're talking about takeaways here from the elections.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire. First day after the primaries have begun, and I've given you some of my feedback, some of my thoughts, some of the takeaways. Many of the things I'm saying are fairly obvious, but I'm just trying to bring them together with clarity. And yeah, Hillary Clinton in very big trouble, obviously, as a candidate that could really make it nationally. And when you push beyond that and then ask yourself, okay, do the Democrats think they have any chance with Bernie Sanders in a national election? Or if it starts to come to that, if Hillary Clinton gets in trouble with emails, if this really comes down, it would seem that if it was anyone but her, she'd be in very big trouble over these emails, as at least as everything's being reported. Does that mean that Joe Biden will jump in to save the Democratic Party? The plot continues to thicken. Nice to know that Jesus is Lord. Not nice to know that many believers still are not engaged and that elections will take place and people will get voted in and we'll complain about it for years when we didn't even bother to vote or we didn't vote intelligently. Or we just voted out of habit because this is what my group or this group or these people always vote for, and we just do it out of rote without really being informed, understanding the issues, and getting involved. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Germantown, Maryland. Will, you're first up today.
Hi, Dr. Brown. God bless you. Thank you for your work.
You're welcome.
Okay. I have an opinion here regarding the caucus from last night. I kind of stayed up late watching it all and all the post-debate stuff or post-caucus talk. And just hearing you mention about Cruz and Rubio's Hispanic heritage, I'm actually from South America originally. And for me, to be quite honest, I don't care if they're Latino or not. I kind of just focus on where they stand and if they take principled stance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I like, that's why I like Ted Cruz. He's my guy. He's my favorite now. But there's some things that have been surfacing in the news about him that kind of, in the caucus, for instance, I read an article about his campaign sending mailers, like shaming mailers, to other people to get them to go out and caucus, but kind of using shaming techniques. And then Carson made some accusation about his campaign, saying that, you know what, that Carson had dropped out. And I like Cruz. I still like him. But if it's true, if those things are true, I'd like for him to kind of come out and address these issues.
Yep. Yeah, actually, first, let me say this. My goal, even though I've endorsed Ted Cruz, I said from the start, is I'm not his apologist. So my goal is not to defend him on every point or, you know, to attack other candidates. I've said a lot regarding Donald Trump because I have concerns about that. And I, even though God's given me a voice and influence, I'm not thinking that my concerns about Donald Trump are going to knock him off his pedestal and help Ted Cruz. I mean, that's not the goal anyway. But I can address these because I have followed them. With regard to the mailer, yeah, they did send that out. What was not reported was that Marco Rubio sent out a very similar one. Marco Rubio's was not quite as strong, but a very similar mailer trying to get the vote out. What's also interesting is that GOP leaders, state leaders in their campaign 2 years ago used an almost identical mailer. So as Todd Starnes on Fox News said, it's a little hypocritical for these other camps to be attacking Senator Cruz for doing almost the same thing as what Marco Rubio did and something very, very similar to what GOP leaders, I think Attorney General and one other major state leader in their campaigns sent out something similar. When Ted Cruz's campaign was asked about it, their response was, "We'll not apologize for trying to get more voters out." That was their response. So I didn't like it when I saw it. There are a lot of things, you know, politically, the emails you get and stuff and appeals for money. I mean, they all do it. I've been on a few different email lists and everybody sends out the same appeals and we need your help and so on. That's just how they raise money at times like that. But the protest about it is quite exaggerated from what I can tell and quite hypocritical. In other words, it's nothing that has not been used by others, including Marco Rubio, to basically say, hey, here are the details and you haven't voted and here's your record. So again, several did it with Ben Carson. Here's what happened. And I've got something that was sent out from Ted Cruz's camp officially addressing this. So Ted Cruz said, first off, I want to say that I'm a huge fan of Dr. Ben Carson. He is a wonderful and talented individual, and I've thoroughly enjoyed our time together on the campaign trail. Last night, when our political team saw the CNN post that Dr. Carson was not carrying on to New Hampshire and South Carolina, our campaign updated grassroots leaders just as we would with any breaking news story. That's fair game. What the team then should have done was send around the follow-up statement from the Carson campaign clarifying that he was indeed staying in the race when that came out. This was a mistake from our end, and for that I apologize to Dr. Carson. So that's the official statement from Ted Cruz addressing that. They got word that Dr. Carson was not going on to New Hampshire and South Carolina. They told their people on the ground. Their people on the ground then informed others that Dr. Carson was dropping out. Then when a subsequent communication came out, they failed to send that out, saying, no, he's actually not dropping out. And they say it's a mistake, and they apologize for it. So he's being honest, telling you what happened and apologizing. So that's sufficient for me to cover that.
Okay, yeah, I understand the honest mistakes. And if he's come out and apologized for it, then, you know, I can take that. But regarding, the shaming mailer thing, with even just because Rubio and the GOP...
I don't like it either. I don't like it either.
You know, yeah. I just, for me, it just, well, especially... I believe reading Cruz's mailer, you actually had neighbors, your people in your neighborhood that also had, you know, I was like...
Right, that was not on Rubio's. Right.
Yeah, right, I was like, come on, we need to stop this. And really, if you want to hold a principled stance and you want to be that moral conservative, then you need to rise above that, you know?
Yep, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. Here's what I would say. Because if I could give input... certain ways I can, hopefully, but if I get input, I'd say, hey, listen, you know the only possible way you can win is God being with you. You've known that from the start. The fact that he's where he is now, 6 months ago, no one would have believed this was possible. 3 months ago, people wouldn't have believed it. So he is where he is, I believe, with God's help. Again, it doesn't mean that God is raising him up as our next president, but I'm saying I do believe it's not just hard work on his end and great strategy, but God's help. So what you want to do is do all the hard work. I mean, he's got the great on-the-ground strategy, and state by state, I think they've mapped out where they can do the best and how. But you want to position yourself to have God's blessing in the full, right? So anything that in any way could be controversial in terms of principle and strongly moral, you'd want to step away from that, not just for the political fallout, right? Not just that someone's going to come back and hit you with that, but so that also God can just smile on it and say, okay, good, this is completely clean. So, Will, I'm with you on that. Thank you for the call, and we'll continue to pray for God's best, and I continue to stand with Senator Cruz. I'm going to keep taking calls, so keep listening online if you have to at AskDrBrown.org, and be sure to check out our very special resource offer. Don't miss it.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. I am blessed and privileged to be on the air with you. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go back to the phones. Queens, New York. Julie, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you. You know, Donald Trump attacked Ted Cruz for 3 weeks, whether it's Ted Cruz is nasty or his Canadian birth.
Or a liar.
Sex, and Ted Cruz survived. This all backfired on Donald Trump, let me tell you. And I think it's fabulous Ted Cruz won. And you know what? People say Iowa doesn't count because people don't, they don't like Ted Cruz. Yeah, Santorum and Huckabee won, but they didn't have enough money to go further. Ted Cruz can go right to the nomination. And Marco Rubio I like too, but I don't trust him on Amnesty, Gang of Eight, and he's an open borders establishment guy. So I don't trust him. But of course, if he's the nominee, I'm going to vote for him. That goes without saying.
Yeah, Julie, I share a lot of your sentiments. Again, look, if it's just a matter of Donald Trump, we know is not a historic conservative.
Right.
Donald Trump can be full of himself, etc. But if he came in with a different approach, if he didn't attack others mercilessly
right.
and falsely, it's like it doesn't matter who I have to hurt to get here.
Yes.
If you're in my way, I'm going to hurt you. Those are the things that deeply concern me. As well as I have no clue which way he would go if elected. Which way would he go in terms of Supreme Court justices? Now, look, he's getting hit from both sides. He told Chris Matthews he would strongly consider appointing judges who would overturn the Supreme Court's ruling on same-sex, quote, marriage. Now, conservatives, like me, are saying that's insufficient. You need to say, I absolutely will do that, as Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio would say. The fact that he said he'd strongly consider it, liberals are upset with him. So we don't know which way he would go ultimately.
Right.
But if he positioned himself differently, if he used different strategy and was just a kinder human being, he'd probably do better. You know, he's very likable when he's humble. He's very likable in his concession speech after losing Iowa last night, and of course was going to be upbeat, and I can understand how he could come away with that. Obviously, he doesn't like losing in any regard.
Can I say something else?
Yeah, let me just say this one thing. He tweeted something out, and I'm probably going to write an article asking what he meant by it, but he said this. Let me find it. He said, I will be talking about my wonderful experience. No, that's not it. I don't believe I have been given any credit by the voters for self-funding my campaign. The only one I will keep doing, but not worth it! Exclamation point.
Right.
What does he mean by not worth it?
No,
that I'm wondering about. But back to you. Go ahead.
Thank you. But the 3 weeks, you know, Ted Cruz survived. Donald Trump, 3 weeks. This is 24/7. Brutal, vicious, personal attack.
Yeah.
Now let's see that Ted Cruz survived. Nobody survives Donald Trump's attacks. Look at Jeb Bush and, you know, Rick Perry. Let's see now how he's going to attack Marco Rubio for New Hampshire and see if Marco Rubio can withstand it. This was brutal for Ted Cruz, in my opinion.
It was brutal on every level. He was getting hit for his mailers.
Right,
he was getting
right.
hit about his Christian faith.
Right,
and,
right.
He was getting hit, you know, that he's an anchor baby. He's
right.
a Canadian citizen. Everybody hates him, and on and on and on. Yeah, I did say it earlier. What a battering, but he's a fighter. Some of these other candidates are real fighters also. Nancy and I were talking about a totally different subject, but both still political. Dr. Carson, I mean, he was such a beloved figure, so many honorary degrees from around the world, and probably he did not know the level of attack he was going to have to endure to get in the race. I mean, it's rough, it's tough, it's mean and ugly, but fascinating to see what's unfolding. Julie, thank you for the call. Much appreciated. We come back. I want to talk to you about keys for conservative Christian revolution.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown, your listener-sponsored voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. If you want to weigh in some of your takeaways from the Iowa caucuses, phone lines are open, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884 is the number to call. You know, if you listen to me for any length of time, if you just listen to the introduction to the show every day, that the theme of revolution burns in me deeply. It has burned in me deeply for years. I've written books with the title or subtitle Revolution, Revolution, Revolution in the Church. This burns in me all the time. What am I talking about? I'm talking about a gospel-based moral and cultural revolution. I'm not talking about taking up arms, God forbid. I'm not talking about violent overthrow of the government. I'm not talking about attacking people we differ with. In fact, I believe the Jesus way is to overcome hatred with love, to overcome lies with truth, to overcome anger with the power of the Holy Spirit. That's what I believe, to overcome evil with good. So that's what I'm devoted to, that kind of revolution. But revolution means radical, dramatic, sweeping change. Revolution means out with the old and in with the new. Revolution means overthrow the status quo. And I see Jesus as the ultimate revolutionary leader. The Great Commission, go into all the world and make disciples of the nations. What is that? That's Jesus saying, come on, let's go and change the world together. Jesus teaching us to pray, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. That's a revolutionary prayer. Out with the kingdoms of this world, in with the kingdom of God, and that will happen fully when Jesus returns and establishes his kingdom on the earth. Right now, our goal is not to establish a theocracy. It is not to set up a situation where Jesus reigns as the king over America, and all Americans are required to obey him under some kind of penalty. In other words, if you don't go to church on Sunday, you're fined. And if you commit adultery, you're stoned to death. No, no, no. We are not advocating a theocracy. We do not want to institute that. What we want to do is we as God's people want to be so changed that we go and change the world around us. That we have an influence as the salt of the earth and the light of the world, and that we, by being changed ourselves, bring about positive, radical, dramatic change in the society around us, hence a gospel-based moral and cultural revolution. I jotted down 5 keys for a conservative Christian revolution, and I talk about it now in the heat and fervor and passion of the election season because it is very easy for many of us who are conservative Christians to put our hope in a conservative Christian candidate as if that candidate could bring about all the changes that we believe are important. That candidate is important. It is on my list. But other things must come first. Otherwise, we will be disappointed once again. So, number one, the revolution is spiritual first. It is spiritual first. That means our greatest enemies are not political parties. Our greatest enemies are not specific groups with certain ideologies. We are engaged in a spiritual battle, and we make our greatest progress first and foremost spiritually, and then things unfold in the world around us. There was a Christian leader decades ago named S.D. Gordon who made the statement, "Prayer is striking the winning blow. Service is gathering up the results." We must put first things first. Jesus teaches us, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness and all these other things, the things we need to live, provision, food, clothing, all these other things will be added to us. So he's saying even in the most basic essentials of life, seek God first. So we must remember, number one, that our revolution is first and foremost a spiritual revolution, which will then have implications in the moral order around us, which will then have implications in the natural order all around us. That's number one. Number two, the only way we will see this happen is with dramatic sweeping awakening in the church. I've said it many a time. I'll say it again. I'm not so much concerned with the presence of darkness in America. I'm more concerned with the absence of light. America is messed up because the Church of America is messed up, and the Church of America is messed up because many of the leaders in America are messed up. As we get our act together, as we repent of the sin in our midst, when I say we, I mean followers of Jesus, and then in particular, leaders, as we repent of the sin in our midst, as we get our marriages, our homes, our lives in order, as we repent of the sexual immorality in the church, as we repent of prayerlessness and corruption, as we repent of lack of love for the hurting and the lost and the needy, as we repent of the sin in our own midst, as we repent of our hypocrisy, how? By the help of the Holy Spirit. We must have an awakening. This cannot be done by human effort. So point one, praying, seeking God, crying out to God, leads to number two, awakening. God begins to awaken us. God begins to change us. Didn't Jesus say in Matthew 5 that if the salt has lost its saltiness, it's of no use? Salt that's lost its saltiness has no function whatsoever. What did you just throw it out? Throw it away. People just trample it underfoot. The light, if we're called to be the light of the world, Jesus says in a different context in Matthew 6, if the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? What's the good of a lamp if you don't have a light bulb or if it's not plugged in? We must shine. Awakening must begin in the church. As the church is revived, we can then begin to have a positive impact on society. How? We're different. We're living differently. Listen, if Christians in large numbers turned away from pornography, the pornography industry would take a hit in America. It's staggering. If Christians didn't have abortions, the abortion industry would take a hit. Yeah, the things that we point fingers at other people at, we're guilty of ourselves. So the awakening must begin with us. As we live differently, it will impact society. And then we're now evangelizing and sharing the gospel, and people are coming to faith. That's our great weapon, prayer and the preaching of the gospel. Number three, we need a holistic strategy. We need a holistic strategy. What are you doing about the school board in your town? What are you doing about the lack of gospel witness in your place of business? What are we doing to raise up the next generation of professors at universities? Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's wrong. The city council in our town passing some radical bill that the vast majority of the population doesn't even know about. Why? Because we didn't bother to get involved in the voting. We need to step back and think holistically. Okay, we're against abortion. Are we pro-life? What are we doing to help the unborn get born? What are we doing to help the families that want to have a child and aren't able? What are we doing to provide adoption services or to get involved with adoption ourselves? We need to look at this holistically. If we just, we're going to pray. We're going to live differently. We're going to evangelize. Okay, and then what about the environment in which our kids are raised? What about what we do in terms of seeking to influence media in positive ways? So why is it that so much of the media coverage is so out of sync with the rest of the country? There are many more conservatives than would be reflected by the media elite who are overwhelmingly liberal. Why is that? So I'm talking about long-term revolutionary strategy that requires people from all different walks of life to be raised up, from the homeschooling mom to the next president of the United States. Then, number four, we do need radical politicians. By radical, I mean people who've had it with the status quo. By radical, I mean people who are more concerned with doing what's right than getting reelected. What I mean is people who will stand up, who will be true to biblical moral principles. Again, not trying to advocate a theocracy, but saying that God's ways are best for society and that our nation is founded on these very principles, that we need to elect politicians. If they disappoint us and they don't hold to their word, then we get rid of them. We say, sorry, your promises the second time aren't going to work because you broke them the first time. All right? We need someone that's going to do what they say and stand firm and not try to be politically correct. And then, lastly, we need to think in a multi-generational way. We need to think in a multi-generational way. Often we see the problems and we come running. We've got to do something to meet the need right now. It's pressing, it's urgent, it's really bad. True. But are we thinking long term? Are we thinking about the world in which our kids and grandkids will be raised up? Yes, Jesus could come back very quickly and it's all over. But thus far, he hasn't. I got saved at the age of 16. I'm about to turn 61. Our oldest granddaughter just turned 15. I need to be thinking about her kids and maybe her grandkids. What are we doing in a multi-generational strategy? If we'll think like this, we could really see a radical, lasting, nation-impacting Jesus revolution. 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. I've got some other items I want to discuss, some things in the news. And if you'd like to weigh in, your takeaway from the Iowa caucuses will get you your calls on the other side of the break.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
And I just tweeted this out. Some friendly advice for our political leaders. Do what is right, not what is politically expedient, and God himself will bless you. Yeah. Just hit. Oh, what happened? Just click. Well, I must have clicked on something else. There we go. All right. Planned Parenthood is strongly behind Hillary Clinton. According to an article on LifeNews.com, Planned Parenthood spends six figures in Iowa to elect abortion activist Hillary Clinton. With late-breaking polls showing pro-abortion Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders running very competitively with pro-abortion Hillary Clinton in Iowa, the site of today's caucuses, so this was posted last night. The Planned Parenthood abortion business spent six figures on a huge ad buy over the weekend, and still she ends up in a virtual dead heat with Bernie Sanders. And he is obviously a pro-abortion guy himself. Non-religious Jew. How fascinating. Hey, he is who he is, right? Someone said looks like he sleeps in the car. He is who he is. No hype there. And his wife, same thing. No hype. They are who they are. And, of course, I passionately disagree with many of his policies, but he is who he is. The article says the abortion company is pulling out all of the stops to elect its best friend president, and its lobbying arm purchased the large advertising buy on Friday to give Clinton a last-minute shot in the arm. And they're saying it outwardly. There's too much at stake for us to take a back seat in this election. Every single leading Republican candidate would strip health care from millions across the country. Not going to strip health care. They're going to stop abortion. They're not going to strip health care. For millions across the country, blocking patients from seeking services at Planned Parenthood, banning safe, legal abortion, and even ending insurance coverage for birth control, Hillary Clinton is someone who won't back down from this fight. She's made it clear that fighting for women's health and reproductive rights is a top priority. Let me just say this as plainly as I can. It's my opinion. I'm not your God. I'm not your Lord. When you go to sleep at night, you don't stand or fall before me. When you leave this world, you don't stand or fall before me. I am not your conscience. I'm just giving you my strong conviction. I cannot see how any follower of Jesus could vote for Hillary Clinton to be president, regardless of who her opposing candidate is. We don't even know if she's going to make it that far. I cannot see it. Just as I couldn't see anyone voting for Barack Obama. Look, you may not have believed that he was going to be as radically pro-abortion as he was. You may not have believed he was going to be as radically pro-homosexual as he was. You may have never thought in a million years that he would light up the White House in rainbow colors to celebrate gay, quote, marriage. You may have never believed that. We told you it was coming. I hoped I'd be wrong. And look, I've raised serious concerns about Donald Trump. If he was elected, I hope I'd be wrong on all of them. I would much rather say, boy, was I wrong, than I hate to say I told you so. Trust me. Trust me on that. But having said that, I do not understand how you could vote for a candidate. I don't care what other qualities they have that are good and positive and how much you dislike the Republican candidates. How you could vote for a candidate who would advocate for the slaughter of the unborn in the womb. Advocate for it. And when it came to Barack Obama, veto the Born Alive Protection Act several times. We're talking about something utterly murderous. You understand what that's guaranteeing? And as a senator, he vetoed it. He voted against it. Threatened to veto it. As a president, that if a baby survived abortion, that you then are required to give it medical care. He said, what did they do otherwise? They just let the baby die. He said, no, yeah, that's what they do. There are hospitals where that will happen. Woman comes in to have an abortion, and there's a complication, and the baby survives the abortion. This baby's a fighter. Somehow this baby survives the abortion. You just let the child die. How long is it going to take? However long it takes, just let that child die. That's sick. Yeah, I know it's sick. The president of the United States, as a senator, voted against the Born Alive Protection Act. Not once, but twice. In fact, maybe it was even more than twice, but certainly at least twice. That's crazy. There is no moral justification for that. It's enough you tried to kill the baby in the womb. Now the baby survives and is viable outside of the womb. Provide it with what it needs. Give it the best shot. I don't see how, under any circumstances, I don't care what else is going on, economy, security, anything, that you could vote for a candidate that you know would slaughter the unborn. You look at what God says about the blood of the innocent. You look about at what God says, how he judged his people because they sacrificed children to Molech. You look at that. It may not be exactly the same as abortion, but it is very, very close. Think of it. Think of it. And then to elect a president that was going to be the most radical pro-homosexual president we ever had. Well, we didn't know. I warned you. Others warned you. And then you had the second time around. You had the second time around when he made it clear where he was standing already to not vote him in. Yeah, but what are the alternatives? The alternatives are that you don't vote for that person. You vote for all the other offices. You put in a protest vote. But you don't vote for someone you know is going to stand by the slaughtering of the unborn and stand by something as fundamental as redefining marriage and attacking the religious freedoms of Americans. So you can differ with me on this. You can get upset with me over it. I say again, I'm not your God. You don't give account to me. I don't give account to you. We both give account to God. I'm just telling you my convictions as a follower of Jesus. And that would mean under no circumstances possibly could I vote for Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders, putting aside socialism and all of that. I just want to make that as clear as I possibly can. And if it offends you, maybe I'm speaking the truth. If it upsets you, maybe I'm speaking the truth. And for all those, well, I shouldn't say all, it's very, very, very few over the years, because you know me, listen to me, and I've got a truly diverse audience that I love and esteem and honor and have learned so much from. But for the few that accused me falsely, outrageously, and in a very ugly way, to be personally honest with you, to those who accused me of differing with Barack Obama because he was black, shame on the few who said that. And everyone else looks, what in the world are you talking about? I know, it's just a few. Well, now why am I so passionately against Hillary Clinton? Because she's a woman? Come on, give me a break. It's the issues. Race has never been the issue. The issues have been the issues. Let us stand for righteousness. Let us call our political leaders to do what is right. Don't bow down to political expediency. Don't go the way of the lesser of two evils. We don't have to. We can have a candidate that stands for righteous principles that's also a capable candidate. And there are a number on the Republican side in that case. So let's pray, in any case, for God's best, for God's plan. And then let us love one another in the midst of our differences. We've got a terrific, really practical, really helpful, really edifying, really inspired, really low price special offer this week. Take advantage of it. Go to AskDrBrown.org to find out more. My bottom line today, draw a line in the sand. Stand for what's right. Don't be moved. Well, I've got some takeaways from the Iowa caucuses and some keys for conservative Christian revolution in America.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
That's powerful stuff, but that was just a couple days ago in Italy, just a few days back in Italy, a massive rally, perhaps as many as a million people. Seems clearly hundreds of thousands were there standing together for marriage in Italy. I've got a report from one of our grads, Italian dear brother, raised listening to my messages, used to listen to them from his earliest days when I started preaching in Italy in 1987. He's got a report from Italy, and of course, those were the words of the famous operatic song, Nessun Dorma. And have you ever seen videos of Pavarotti singing it? I mean, it's very intense, very, very intense. Of course, it's in Italian, and you know, what does it mean? Nobody shall sleep. I'm just looking at English translation online. Nobody shall sleep, even you, O princess, in your cold room. Watch the stars that tremble with love and with hope. It's a love song, but it's a triumphant song, and it was used as a wake-up call, a call to the church to awaken in Italy. I'll tell you more about that on the other side of the break as we just get things started. Welcome to The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown. My joy to be with you. The Iowa caucuses, quite amazing. Amazing that Hillary Clinton can't easily beat Bernie Sanders. Amazing that in six of the precincts, it comes down to a coin toss as to who. How do you decide getting votes on a coin toss? And then mysteriously, she wins all six coin tosses. It could happen. Stranger things have happened. The polls, basically all wrong. Scientific polls, Des Moines Register respected polls, Donald Trump up by 5 points, Donald Trump up by 7 points. Kevin McCullough, radio commentator, I read an article that he wrote, read it yesterday, where he said Donald Trump will be lucky to hold off Marco Rubio for third place. Wow, that actually happened. And Ted Cruz won decisively with all the junk that came against him and the pressure and what happened at the debate and on and on and on. Wild, strong ground game, showing the conservative movement alive and well. A lot of interesting things, a lot of things to take away from the Iowa caucuses. And my prayer continues to be, God, your best, your plan. You raise up whom you choose for our nation. But a lot to talk about, and I've got some constructive thoughts as well. Last hour, I also laid out five principles for a conservative Christian revolution. We'll post that as a YouTube video, hopefully in days to come, that will just lay out long-term how we can bring about change. If Jesus doesn't come back in our lifetimes, what we must do to see long-term change come. If you want to weigh in, your takeaway from the Iowa caucuses, give me a call, 866-348-7884. I want to come back, take your calls. I want to also share with you what happened in Italy. A little later in the broadcast, I'm going to speak with Reverend James Robison. He was part of the movement that got Ronald Reagan to run for office and got him elected. What can we learn from the moral majority of the Reagan Revolution? What was right? What was wrong? We'll talk about that later in the broadcast.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Before I go to your calls with takeaway and thoughts from the Iowa caucuses, here is a report from my friend and grad from ministry school, Tony Mora, in Italy. I asked him for an update yesterday, and here's what he sent me. And what you just heard a few minutes ago, the singing of Nessun Dorma, the booming voice of Pavarotti singing that was played live in the large Circus Maximus where people met. Italian organizers of the conference claim 2 million were there. Others estimate 1 million. I saw reports saying, no, it was only tens of thousands. So presumably hundreds of thousands that some thought was a million or more. Most mainstream media, Tony writes, did cover it, but to criticize it. It was not well received because it's just happening while in our government they're discussing civil unions and stepchild abortions. Stepchild abortions, or I think he meant adoptions. There is going to be a law soon, but the right wing is pushing it back. In other words, they're trying to institute same-sex civil unions and adoptions in Italy. There's going to be a law soon, but the right wing is pushing it back, and some of the left wing have some issue with the adoption part. The gay community met in 100 cities all over Italy just a week before the push up. Their slogan was Wake Up Italy. I've seen pictures of that, and very few people showed up. The average Italian is okay with civil union, but has a hard time with adoption. The president of the Evangelical Alliance had the opportunity to speak on the stage, and also many churches joined the rally with some of their groups. The rally was organized by non-religious associations, even though most of the leaders are strong Catholics. The Vatican itself didn't sponsor it, but had good words about it. And then there was the highlight of the event is that was played with the call, wake up, don't sleep, don't sleep, don't sleep, church, wake up. Now, what's fascinating is in a country like France, which is more secular than Italy in many ways, although Italy has a tremendously strong worldly aspect to it. I mean, it mingles traditional religion and worldliness in a very unique way, which makes it such a tough, challenging mission field. What's interesting is that the rallies that were held last year with as many as a million people in France, arguing against redefining marriage, arguing against the war on gender and the downplaying of gender distinctions, one of the main leaders of that was a gay comedian. Say, what? Yeah, he's saying we shouldn't be changing marriage. And many saying kids need a mom and dad, and others saying men are men, women are women. This in France. So the pushback comes in many, many different ways. 866-34-TRUTH. End of last hour, I gave a bit of a passionate talk about under no circumstances, my opinion, my strongly held opinion, under no circumstances can a true follower of Jesus vote for a candidate that you know is going to be a pro-abortion candidate. I see no justification for it. To me, it would be just like in the days of slavery, just like in the days of slavery. No matter how good the candidate would have been on numerous other issues, economy, national security, whatever other issues someone was going to raise, if that candidate was a pro-slavery candidate, I couldn't vote for them. I couldn't vote for them. If it would mean I couldn't vote for a particular person, president or congressman, I'd have to vote just for other positions, or if it meant sitting out an election, either way, I could not vote for a pro-slavery candidate. Well, the same way I can't vote for a pro-abortion candidate. That's why under no possible circumstances, because I voted for Barack Obama or for Hillary Clinton or for Bernie Sanders. Couldn't do it. Unthinkable. And it was unthinkable to me that other Christians voted for Obama once they knew. I mean, some said we don't know his position. Well, should have known it, shouted it out loud enough. But once his position was known on abortion and redefining marriage, that settles it. Don't vote. There are others to vote for, or you do some alternative somehow, but you don't vote for someone. That's my deeply heartfelt conviction. Share that at the end of the last hour. All right, to the phones in Richmond, Virginia. Teresa, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I listen to you all the time. On my lunch breaks, I make sure I get out in time to hear. and I do appreciate you. And I wanted you to know everything you said in the passionate conversation that you had prior. Amen. Everything was exactly right. Now, myself, I catch it a lot, too, as a black woman and a woman, because I'm always accused of being wrong for telling Christians that, you know, you're supposed to stand for righteousness. So how can you stand for righteousness and vote for the very opposite thing you're supposed to stand for? If Christ said no to it, how can you say yes to it because a person is black? I have gotten it. But nonetheless, I want you to know everything you said and your passion. I say amen to it because it is exactly right. I feel the same way. That's all I got.
Yeah. Hey, bless you, Teresa. It is a wild thing to me that you could get accused. I mean, somehow you're being disloyal to fellow black Americans if you disagreed with Barack Obama, or I was taking issue because of his race, and now if I'm against Hillary Clinton, it's going to be because she's a woman. It's like, hey, I like Carly Fiorina. I don't think she's presidential material, but I like Carly Fiorina. Yeah, she's a woman. Mm-hmm. And I like Ben Carson. He's black. It's, you know, so you can't define an ideology by skin color or by gender.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yet somehow there's the notion has to be overcome. Hey, I just want to tell you, the fact that you do your best to catch your lunch break to listen to me, that means the world to me. God bless you, and thank you so much, Teresa.
You too, sir.
All right. Be strong.
I will. You too. Stand for right.
You got it. Deal. I'm not going anywhere. By God's grace. 866-34-TRUTH. Raleigh, North Carolina. I was going to Raleigh. Tell you what, let me go in a different direction for a minute here. A poll that I have been doing, I did it on Twitter, and then One News Now ran it on their website. Let me get you the most up-to-date figures here, all right? Here's what the poll said. You ready? And I was trying to reach Republican voters primarily. That was my goal. And One News Now, mainly conservative readers there, conservative Christians. So I think we accomplished that largely with maybe a large Republican base. But this was the question. And so far, there are 4,490 votes on the One News Now website. And my Twitter vote, let me just check how many we had there. I know just when we do something on Twitter, I'm not that strong on Twitter, just a little over 19,000 people. We were much stronger on Facebook. But I did a poll on Twitter. And let me just look to see the final stats here. And then we did an on-the-air poll yesterday. If you normally vote Republican and Trump gets the nomination, will you vote for him to be president? Out of the 477 votes that were cast on my Twitter feed, 33% said yes, they would vote for him. 44% said no, they wouldn't. And 23% said they were undecided. So a full two-thirds either said they wouldn't vote for him or they were undecided. That's very intense. Now, on the One News Now poll, they've got 4,490 votes cast so far. If Trump wins the GOP nomination and the Democratic nominee is either Clinton or Sanders, I will vote for Trump. That's 56.37%. So a little over 56% said they would vote for Trump. Vote for Clinton or Sanders, 1.71%. So under 2%. So obviously not a lot of Democrats weighing in there. But that was our goal, to get to mainly Republicans. That's who we were asking. One for every one or the other. That's who we were asking. Vote for an alternative candidate, 16.64%. So almost 17%. Sit out the election, 4.61%. So almost 5%. Not know what to do, 20.67%, so almost 21%. So if you total that up, think of this. I want you to hear this, okay? So let's say if we total this up, 17, 5, 20, 42% either said they would vote for an alternative candidate, they would sit out the election, or they would not know what to do. So that raises this question, and I may write an article about it tonight. It raises this question. Does a vote for Donald Trump today mean a vote for Hillary tomorrow? You say, what? Let me explain. If Donald Trump was elected, obviously everything is up for grabs. Senator Cruz, with his tremendous showing, he has momentum. Senator Rubio, with his surprise showing, he has momentum. Donald Trump still has the overwhelming high numbers in the polls, right? So he has whatever momentum he has. So it's all up for grabs in that respect. But what if electing Donald Trump as the Republican nomination would virtually guarantee a Democratic victory because a large number of Republicans would not vote for him? It would not be something. All those saying we got to vote for him, he's the only one who can take down Hillary, could be quite the opposite. We'll be right back. Some interesting news from the UK.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thank you for joining us on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, news from overseas. Just as we've had an attack on our religious freedoms and liberties here in America, at the expense of gay rights, in other words, sexual rights, sexual freedoms, Trump religious rights, religious freedoms. The same thing has happened in the UK. The same thing has happened in Canada. The same thing has happened in Australia. It's an obvious conflict. Well, in Belfast, in Ireland, bakers there declined to participate in a gay activist cause with their bakery. Because of that, they were ordered to pay a fine of $750 for, quote, injury to feelings after they refused to promote homosexuality on their product. So they appealed. The higher court's hearing is scheduled for tomorrow. The two-day hearing was listed by Lord Chief Justice Sir Declan Morgan. Boy, look at all those titles before you get to his name. His name is Declan Morgan, but he is Lord Chief Justice Sir. Lord is if you're knighted, right? So Lord Chief Justice Sir Declan Morgan, following a ruling from County Judge Isabel Brownlee that the Christian-owned Usher's Baking Company violated the nation's pro-gay provisions by refusing to decorate a cake with a gay marriage slogan. It writes the bakery's religious and freedom of speech protections under the European Convention on Human Rights. Similar cases have arisen in the United States, etc. So we know all about that. And, of course, Aaron and Melissa Klein didn't cost them $750, but $135,000 seized from their accounts by the government, as I understand it. And this was for the alleged emotional damages experienced by a lesbian couple for whom they politely declined to cook a wedding cake. $135,000. In alleged damages. Well, here's why I bring this story up. Here's where I bring it up. I've said it. I document it in my book, Outlasted the Gay Revolution, why I feel this way, that gay activism has within itself the seeds of self-destruction and will overplay its hand. Those who were bullied will become bullies. Well, there are gay activists who don't like this. There are gay activists who say this goes too far. I watched a video on Facebook by a gay baker who was ripping into the people that are going to try to sue Christian bakers for saying we can't bake you a gay wedding cake. This gay baker was ripping into them for doing that. And there are plenty of bakers you can go to, and he puts himself into a cake. He can charge as much as $1,000 for some giant wedding cake, and he puts himself into it. He doesn't want to make it for somebody who doesn't want his artistry and his work. And it was, you know, like live and let live kind of thing. Well, check this out. One of the most outspoken gay activists in the UK is Peter Tatchell. He is well known. I've seen his name many, many times and read a number of his articles. And in point of fact, I have taken issue with him very strongly on a number of public statements and campaigns that he has made. Listen to this. He's changed his mind on the issue. He said, like most gay and equality campaigners, I initially condemned the Christian-run Asher's Bakery in Belfast over its refusal to produce a cake with a pro-gay marriage slogan for a gay customer, Gareth Lee. I supported his legal claim against Asher's and the subsequent verdict. The bakery was found guilty of discrimination last year. Now, 2 days before the case goes to appeal, I have changed my mind. Good for you, Mr. Tatchell, in the midst of our differences. I commend you. Much as I wish to defend the gay community, I also want to defend freedom of conscience, expression, and religion. Gareth Lee's legal case against Asher's was backed by the Equality Commission of Northern Ireland. It argued that the bakery's actions breached Northern Ireland's Equality Act and Fair Employment and Treatment Order, which prohibit discrimination in the provision of goods, facilities, and services on the respective grounds of sexual orientation and political opinion. Last May, a Belfast court found Asher's guilty of discrimination on both grounds, ordering it to pay Lee £500 compensation, so about $750. I profoundly disagree with Asher's opposition to same-sex love and marriage and support protests against him. Nevertheless, on reflection, the court was wrong to penalize Asher's, and I was wrong to endorse its decision. Now, you got to commend anybody, whether you agree with them or not, when they say I was wrong. I made a mistake. Even if you don't like the way they changed, in this case, I believe he did the right thing, but you still have to honor someone who can say I made a mistake. And trust me, I've had my share of times doing that. The lawsuit against the bakery was well-intended. He says it sought to challenge homophobia, but it was a step too far. So obviously, I don't agree with everything he's saying here. Yeah, a step too far. Yes! It pains me to say this as a longtime supporter of the struggle for LGBT equality in Northern Ireland, where same-sex marriage and gay blood donors remain banned. The equality laws are intended to protect people against discrimination. A business providing a public service has a legal duty to do so without discrimination based on race, gender, faith, and sexuality. However, the court erred by ruling that Lee was discriminated against because of his sexual orientation and political opinions. His cake request was refused not because he was gay, but because of the message he asked for. There is no evidence that his sexuality was the reason Asher's declined his order. And such a conclusion, according to Tatchell, is bad precedent. Northern Ireland's laws against discrimination on the grounds of political opinion were framed in the context of decades of conflict. They were designed to heal the sectarian divide by preventing the denial of jobs, housing, and services to people because of their politics. There was never an intention that this law should compel people to promote political ideas with which they disagreed. This raises the question, should Muslim printers be obliged to publish cartoons of Muhammad? Come on, I've been asking that for years now. Or Jewish ones publish the words of a Holocaust denier. Or gay bakers accept orders for cakes with homophobic slurs. If the Asher's verdict stands, it could, for example, encourage far-right extremists to demand that bakeries and other service providers facilitate the promotion of anti-migrant, anti-Muslim opinions. It would leave businesses unable to refuse to decorate cakes or print posters with bigoted messages. The Christian Institute recently posted a video of the key managers of the bakery, Daniel and Amy MacArthur, explaining that the lower court decision appeared to have been made before the evidence was presented. They wanted to teach us a lesson. They said, if you're a Christian, don't bring it into work. For that, I say, wow. And may there be awakening. May there be opening of eyes. And may gay activists take heed as well. 866-34-TRUTH. I'll tell you what, I'm going to go short on time now. I'm going to go right to the phones on the other side of the break. So stay right there. I'll get you on the other side of the break. And then I'll be joined after that by Reverend James Robison. He was involved in the movement to get Ronald Reagan to run for president. He was involved in standing with him in many ways to be the president. He was involved in the early days or was there in the early days of the founding of the Moral Majority. What lessons can we learn as we see some of the pushback from Iowa being that conservative Christian movements are strong in America with the voting for Ted Cruz? What can we learn from the good and the bad of the past? We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us. Number to call, 866-348-7884. Going to go to the phones momentarily. First, I just want to say this one thing. I've got some friendly advice for all those running for political office. Can I encourage you, if you are a God-fearing person, if you are a follower of Jesus, can I encourage you from the bottom of my heart, do what is right rather than what is politically expedient, and God will bless you. Do what is right and don't rely on it has to be done this way and it has to be done that way. Do what is right and do not compromise your convictions and do not water down what is right in God's sight because you're running for political office, and God himself will be with you. He will make up the deficit. He will raise up voters. He will expose error of those coming against you. He will promote your good ideas. You cannot sacrifice the blessing of God by doing what is politically expedient or compromising here and there because that's the way everybody does it. Hold to your godly Christian ethic. God will bless you. And you know what else? Your supporters will be thrilled, and you'll gain more supporters. And it is the path to victory. It's counterintuitive. It goes against the wisdom of the world. But we're talking about honoring God and having his blessing. Nothing, nothing is worth sacrificing the blessing of God on your campaign. Hey, friends, that was free advice. Yeah, I know all the political leaders are going to be lining up to thank me. Absolutely free advice. We go to Ordell in Salt Lake City, Utah. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
Good. I listen to your show every day at lunch. I appreciate you and appreciate your ministry. I pray for you every day.
Thank you so much.
I'm having a hard time getting my head around the fact that we're even still talking about Hillary. And I know I'm not the only one thinking this, but why are we still talking about her when she should be indicted?
Yeah, listen, it's a mystery. Could you imagine if this was any of the other candidates and they had this ongoing scandal? I mean, literally, something. Absolutely. Look, the David Petraeus, from everything we can see, he was terribly guilty, got involved in an adulterous affair with someone that was writing about him, and then ends up, you know, she has access to confidential emails and whatever the reports were. I mean, that's terrible.
But
what Hillary Clinton did as Secretary of State is ghastly, according to all the reports that we have. FBI investigation. I mean, you're talking about really heavy penalties, and a lesser person easily wind up in jail. It's mystifying. But listen, I don't know that I don't know that she's going to survive. I mean, she seems thoroughly unelectable right now. The fact that she was challenged by Bernie Sanders, and now he's going to come away with a lot more momentum, in my view. And even the bare dead heat, or was there a victory in Iowa? I mean, that's tainted in different ways and accusations of manipulation and all this stuff. But if this just comes down, I mean, listen, it's tough enough to win a campaign. Look at it like this. You're running a marathon, but now you got a 50-pound weight tied to your back. The world's best runner is going to lose terribly. So, you know, there's I don't want to be conspiratorial. There are all kinds of things, you know, all kinds of speculation in terms of what could be going on. But yeah, it is a mystery. And you have to wonder if Hillary Clinton continues to struggle the way she is, and then things get worse with the email scandal, and Bernie Sanders is the man, is Joe Biden then gonna rise up and say, hey, here I am to save the party? But listen, you know, the one other thing, we should pray for Hillary Clinton. She does profess to be a Christian, by the way. We should, and has Methodist upbringing. We should pray for God to really get hold of her. And then Bernie Sanders, non-religious Jew. Wow. And how come the media is not talking about it? I'll say it again. 60% of the votes that came in on the Republican side were for minority candidates. 50% Hispanic, 10% Black. We'll be right back.
Fire we please. Stand in the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast. Hey, I just gave some free advice. I just gave some free advice to all political candidates. Do what is right in God's sight rather than what is politically expedient. God will bless you for it. All right. I want to transition now to my special guest, Reverend James Robison. You've seen him on Life Outreach International, seen his TV show. Hopefully you visit the new website, Stream, which is now a year old, stream.org, for the latest news, commentary, and Christian inspiration. But James Robison is uniquely positioned to speak to us today because he was part of the movement that helped encourage Ronald Reagan to run for president. And he was there when the moral majority rose up. And he could give us some great, great perspectives. So, James, thanks so much for taking time to join us again on The Line of Fire.
Well, Michael, it's good to be with you, and I want to let everyone know, if they've not read your article, which is a lead voice on the stream right now, I've had it. This is your title. I've had it with The Line, but we're not electing a pastor in chief. You know, if you elect a leader and you understand what is so obvious, that we so often as human beings, like sheep, go astray, we need leadership to find the green pastures and to find the security from the predators, and to find still water. You need a leader. You need right. someone who, in fact, has a shepherd's heart, even if you don't attach that to Scripture. We need leadership that's wise. And wisdom does come from above. Our founders understood it as divine providence. Yes. And without that wisdom, they could not establish a foundation that the freedom they desired could stand on.
So in that sense, in your mind, if you're going to vote for someone, must that person be a person of moral integrity?
I think that person must be a person of character and moral integrity, which does not mean that they have never missed the mark. Mm-hmm. It acknowledges the fact that there is a mark, there is a standard that we're to live up to, and when we miss it, we don't move the standard to accommodate our choice, however rotten they may be or however justifiable we may feel they are. We acknowledge that we miss the mark. We have a reliable standard. It's revealed by nature's God and in nature's law. We can see it in what God created, because all of these things are controlled by natural law. But we can also be influenced by a supernatural divine enabling, which our founders made very clear that the freedom we had been given through what they had established could only be preserved by a moral, and they said over and over, religious people.
Yes.
Which doesn't simply mean they're traditionally religious, but they actually have a relationship with a supreme being that impacts their character. I don't think we can have a great leader who doesn't have character based upon what right. we would call the Judeo-Christian principles.
So basically, the way our nation is set up, with the freedoms that we have, that if you're not going to micromanage with some type of totalitarian dictatorship or a king giving edicts and everyone has to be under that, the only way that this was designed to function was presupposing that Americans would be a moral and religious people, which would mean on some level the president has to reflect that for the nation to go in the right direction. Now, I want to get to your history, which is a unique history. And you can speak to many today that are watching, perhaps, history repeating itself. I read some articles, saw some quotes when Ronald Reagan was running. There's no way he can win, and he's too conservative, and America will never have anyone like him, and he's too much not part of the establishment. Not only does he wins a landslide. Now, many draw parallels to Senator Ted Cruz because the same things are said about him. He's too conservative, etc. So as people are now talking about that, the conservative movement being strong and alive in America, before we go back to the Reagan Revolution and the birth of the moral majority and the good and bad in that, get your perspective on it, what about some takeaways from the Iowa caucuses in terms of, whether it's Ted Cruz or someone else, in terms of the idea that conservatism and even a Christian-based conservatism remains strong and viable in America? Is that a right takeaway from the caucuses?
Well, I would hope so. although there seem to be some who are campaigning against those principles.
Right.
And they've actually gone to what I would call more ridiculous extremes. And they also get a cheering section and so forth. But
naturally,
I think that we can see what a people who believe in the importance of these principles that you referenced turning out, because the people who claim a relationship with God and that the media categorizes as evangelicals is one example, and
right,
certainly that would also include Catholics who have a relationship with God the Father, these people were active and they impacted in that state in a profound way. And they can and should, as Ronnie Floyd, the president of the Southern Baptist Convention, points out in a Fox News commentary yesterday, that in fact Christians can determine the direction and course of the nation through this next election by their prayerful participation. And you've been encouraging that, and I'm grateful for it. I think we really do need their participation.
Yeah, and listen, we have no business throwing stones at elected officials and complaining about their bad decisions when we didn't even vote, when we didn't even get involved, when we didn't even raise our voices, because if we had gotten involved or raised our voices, perhaps someone else would have been elected. So in certain ways, we have to take the heat for it. Why is there, though, often an apathy with many believers in terms of voting? Do we have a wrong view about, hey, pie in the sky kind of thing, and Jesus coming any moment, we really don't have to think about these things, or Christians shouldn't be involved in politics? Because often we lag behind in that.
Well, number one, the father of all lies is trying to move the people who understand truth and its transforming power away from the process, trying to keep us from having a salt and light effect. And sometimes it seems the enemy is winning. We don't have any right to complain if we don't participate. But I'll tell you another reason. You've seen this too much, Michael. The lack of integrity, the cruel nature of the political process, this iron sharpening iron process, is so uncomfortable to people that they just would rather go home and take care of their own business. That's the tendency of many conservatives. We can go on, manage our affairs, go on down the road. But while they're doing that, someone else is literally taking us into the ditch of depression and debt and defeat and total deception. So we cannot dismiss ourselves from the process. Salt protects the precious. If it loses its effect, the precious will be trampled under feet. We are watching that happen. And I'm pleading with Christians to pray, to become informed and so excited about what freedom offers that they will stand diligently to protect and preserve it. Let me make this statement about freedom, and I pray your listeners get this. The blessings of freedom are so indescribably awesome in the opportunity and the blessings it provides that if you do not have a personal encounter with the power source that gives you the character, attributes, and strengths to handle freedom's blessings, they are so great, it is very easy to begin to worship those benefits and to miss the source that provided it, the freedom that made it possible. Freedom is delicate. And if you do not understand the meaning of those blessings it offers, you will then become an idol worshiper yourself. You'll be distracted from the truth and the freedom that you've enjoyed and lose it.
And we see that then with kind of a nationalism, populism, American dream movement, which is devoid or separated from godly principles. So you want the freedoms, the benefits, without recognizing the source of it. And that's not going to get us where we need to go either.
It will not. And I want to say something. You mentioned the Reagan Revolution. I hope you'll bring this up a little bit. I think maybe you said we might go into a second segment. You know, I was so much in the center of that. And by the way, I saw when the religious right, moral majority, and all of that influenced the religious roundtable I was vice president of. I was a best friend to Dr. Falwell. We were close. I saw when that political power base became an appendage of a particular party, we began to lose our influence in shaping character and the very nature of not only the country, but individuals necessary to preserve it. And then it lost its high church impact effect. But here's what I saw in interaction with Reagan, and I would say this to every candidate. Hear this. I saw the most humble, teachable, gifted man I ever met with. Now, we know we've got gifted people running right now. You mentioned Ted Cruz, brilliant beyond words, smartest man in the room. But here's the question we would ask of all of those candidates. Do you have a humility and a meekness that is a characteristic of the Spirit of the living God, where you can be taught, where you can be tempered, where the friction will make you a keener cutting edge, and you will not be resistant to that which transforms even our minds and our hearts? Ronald Reagan was the most humble, meek, teachable, truly gifted communicator,
amazing,
dynamic leader with deep convictions reminiscent of Washington himself. And I watched his surrounding people, those around him, were the exact opposite. And he had to resist the establishment to become the man and president that he was. But boy, was he ever humble and teachable.
Amazing.
Remarkably
The humble, teachable part, we don't hear that enough. We'll be right back with James Robinson.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us today. I want to continue my conversation with Reverend James Robinson. By all means, visit the stream today, stream.org. You can read my article that was just mentioned. I've had it with The Line, but we're not electing a pastor in chief. I'm looking at other articles. Bernie Belvedere, Iowa's three great storylines, Matt Staver and Keith Fournier, this major LGBT group wants Christian colleges exposed, then changed, Jason Scott Jones on the ground in Iowa with the Cruz camp, Thomas Sowell, Roger Ailes was right to tell Trump, grow up, and then breaking news being reported there, lots of great information, and go over to the God section, the inspiration section, you'll be blessed as you do. All right, James, from your perspective, having been there in the days of the Reagan Revolution, having been someone that was able to counsel him and give input into his life, having watched the moral majority rise and, as you say, become an appendage of one party, the Republican Party, what lessons can we learn? What was done right back then? What do we need to do if we're going to see a God-based conservative revolution in our day?
Remain consumed by the principles of freedom and the biblical principles essential for freedom to be built and established and preserved by, and exalt those principles. Lift up a standard. Hold the standard high. Because what happens, as you see in Romans, when you begin to ignore God and you begin to worship the benefits and blessings even of freedom, just as they did when Israel entered the Promised Land, they literally had their hearts turned toward the benefits and blessings rather than the Lord that made it possible. And so what you have to do is keep holding those principles up, and you must not be caught up in the spirit of a personality or a party, because both parties, all parties, have room right now for correction. Mm-hmm. In some instances, we might say massive correction,
yes,
because they are literally headed totally away from the truth that's essential to freedom.
All right, if we want to take a moral stand as followers of Jesus, we want to not impose a theocracy, but live righteously ourselves and have a righteous influence on society and advocate for righteous principles and ideas in the society, what can we learn from what the moral majority did? There are obviously many good things that came out of it and many strong messages that came, and yet you're saying that it became an appendage of a political party. Right now, all of the conservative candidates are on the Republican side, and evangelicals are going to have their greatest influence on the Republican side. So it's kind of a fine line to walk. What are some missteps that we have to avoid?
We see the reason that we're seeing the things better on one side is because those principles have been exalted, and people have said, we will not violate those principles. Mm-hmm. We're going to value all life. One of the weaknesses oftentimes of the, quote, conservative movement of the Republican Party is they have not been seen as individuals who cared very deeply for the poor and those who are struggling.
Right, exactly.
And I think you're seeing now, I don't care whether it's from the Koch brothers who are trying to reach out to the poor and those who are not educated and with their libertarian position, at least trying to offer them some hope and help that the government can never give them. The government keeps people dependent and takes away their incentive and their tenacity and the potential to reach for the stars, so to speak, and reach for opportunity. So you've got to correct the parties with the principles essential to correction. Right now, it seems that the party that's often referred to as the left, they have not shown the value and the preciousness of life. They have not shown the value and importance of the family when there's nothing that contributes to economic chaos and to the decadence in the family and the destruction of marriage and family like that particular mindset has. I mean, it is unbelievable that a party can espouse those things. And then the people who say they believe family is important and they believe life is important and morals are important and marriage is important, how in the world they can continually line up with that party rather than putting a trumpet, so to speak, to their lips and sounding a certain sound on the trumpet, get back to the standards. Yeah. Reagan was the one that made the statement, I didn't leave the Democratic Party, they left me, meaning that they left the principles that had been important in many lives and effective for so long. So if we as believers and the church will hold up that reliable standard that gives us that unshakable foundation upon which to build, I believe all parties and all candidates will be moved by. Ronald Reagan said, I know you don't endorse me. He said that to a group of evangelicals. Yeah. And he said, so I want you to know I endorse you. Endorse what? The principles that you espouse.
Yeah.
I wish both parties would get to doing that, where we could someday run a Washington against a Lincoln. Wouldn't that be a great dilemma?
Yeah, that would be an awesome dilemma to have. We've just got about one more minute, but you saw all of the pundits being wrong. You saw when Reagan was told no way he could win, and of course he wins by a landslide, then he wins by a landslide once again. You look at what's happening now. Can the political establishment, and I mean Republican and Democrat, can the political establishment be overcome that we can get the right candidate rather than just an establishment candidate?
If we determine the right candidate by the essential principles and we refuse to move away from them. And I think the stage is set for it. To be very frank with you, we've got candidates running now that if they don't win the nomination, they need to have, in my opinion, several of them a cabinet position or an agency head. They are highly qualified, wonderful, principled people. They really want the wisdom of God. When they've come to me to pray with them, they didn't come to get an endorsement. They know I don't give one. They came to get wisdom and counsel so they could walk and lead in the right direction when the opportunity presents itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I appreciate the wisdom. I appreciate the perspective. And let's stay on our knees and let's stay involved. Thank you so much for weighing in today. Much appreciated.
I love you and appreciate you, Michael. God bless.
Love you too. God bless. James Robinson, again, visit thestream.org. Check out on the latest articles, perspectives. It's a unique website in that it's a great news website. It is a great news website. So if you want to read what happened in the caucuses and get the latest breaking news there, you'll have it. But then you'll get solid Christian perspective, other conservative perspective, and some inspiration. It's my joy to contribute regularly for The Stream. That is stream.org. Friends, be sure to go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click on latest articles. Click on latest videos. In fact, if you go to my YouTube channel, even now, Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown on YouTube, go there. We've got three new videos. One is my teaching from last week on the hardening of Pharaoh's heart, Hebrew insights. We actually put the Hebrew text up and so you can see what's going on in key verses. And then my lecture on same-sex cult marriage from the Faroe Islands, followed by my interview with a local journalist and audience Q&A. So you'll really be enriched by these videos. They're all free for your viewing on our YouTube channel. Go to YouTube and then Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown, to watch those. If you like them, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Share these with our friends. And when you're on my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, when you go there, check out this week's very special resource offer. Trust me, you will be blessed and helped by it. My bottom line today, let's heed the wisdom. Let's learn from past generations. Let's keep the main thing the main thing. What are the principles on which you stand?